Sports Time Radio. All sports, all the time.
Let's wrap up the week with the Friday edition of Sports Time Radio. Of course, I'm the Big Jack, and hey, it is Friday.
Start spreading the news.
All right, and if we're not having any technical difficulties, that means Schomburg Stu should be here.
The man's music will never die.
So there we go. Hey, I was afraid it wasn't going to bring you in. I was a little concerned there. So we're okay. Anyways, if you'd like to call into the podcast, 646-478-3753 is the number to do that. If not, feel free to email us, sportstimeradio@hotmail.com. Anything else you need, head over to sportstimeradio.com. Now, you know, the blogs go up on Wednesdays and Saturdays, so look for something popping up there sometime tomorrow morning. Of course, while you're at sportstimeradio.com, you want to hit that link and follow it over to the Sports Time Radio Facebook page. If you could like that while you were over there, well, hey, we'd greatly appreciate that. But don't forget, we also have the Twitter feed, which is at Sports Time Radio. Now, sadly, we still don't quite have Stu up and running on Twitter yet, but you can find me there at Burke Time. And as always, feel free to send me anything you want to ask Stu, and I will gladly pass it along. So, all right, here we go. What's going on?
Well, I'd like to ask your opinion as to who's better, the Bears, the Blackhawks, or the Bulls?
And I would pass. Next question. Oh,
yeah.
So, yeah.
No comments. No comments, right?
Yeah, you know, I don't have a lot of confidence in the Bulls. You know, I mean, I honestly believe they're a 20-win team, if that. I really thought the Blackhawks were going to be better this year. You know, I was hoping for a Corey Crawford bounce back, and, you know, they signed Robin Lehner, who's been a solid, you know, not spectacular goalie, but, you know, as the number two, you would think it would be fine, and that hasn't worked out. And then I don't know what the heck happened to the Bears. I mean, you know, was it the fact that they're playing a better schedule? Were they just overachieving last year? I mean, there's, you know, just so many questions that, it's really just too hard to answer here with these teams. And sadly, it doesn't look like we're going to get a playoff team out of the three, and we got to start looking forward to baseball already.
Yeah, are we going to get a playoff team there either? I'm not sure about that just yet.
Well, maybe we'll get the White Sox.
That's possible if some of these other guys they bring up are good major league candidates. Remember how the Cubs went from 2014 to 2015. A little big turnaround there, so it could happen to the White Sox.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, you know, it's weird because I keep seeing all these people talk about how they, you know, there's so many big bats out there and the White Sox need to go get one. And, you know, like I saw yesterday that there was, I never remember these guys' names, but he believes the White Sox main target should be Nicholas Castellanos. And I don't understand what a lot of these guys are thinking, because what they need is a big veteran top of the rotation starter.
Exactly.
You
right.
know, like what really, you know, what really set the Cubs up is when they signed John Lester. You know, you needed that guy at the top of the rotation who could, you know, give as good as he could get at times. And even if maybe they're not ready to win and they're a year away, you need that guy. You know, adding an extra bat isn't going to help you. So I don't understand.
Have trouble with the funding, though. You know, funding. Do they have enough money to get a frontline pitcher?
You know, they were in on Machado. You know, I mean, they made him a really nice offer. You know, the problem with him was the fact that he was looking for guaranteed money, and the White Sox wanted him to earn it. You know, they offered him a really incentive-laden contract where he actually could have made more money as a member of the White Sox, but he chose to sign with the Padres and take the guaranteed money.
Yeah, and he did not have a great season, but he's a solid player. He's a solid player, but I think you're right about the White Sox. Maybe they will have enough money to try to get a frontline pitcher, but there's always a risk in getting a frontline pitcher, and there seems to be so many injuries in pitching now that you don't know. You don't know. You got to get someone who's reliable, who has a history of not getting injured and missing action during the course of the season. Someone, of course, like John Lester, as you pointed out, who may miss a start or two on occasion, but has proved to be very durable during his major league career.
Yeah, you know, the tough part may be the fact that when you start looking at the free agents, there aren't going to be a lot of these guys out there. I mean, we're going to get, you know, Madison Bumgarner. We're going to get Gerrit Cole. You know, Dallas Keuchel goes back on the free agent market. You know, Hyun-Jin Ryu is coming off the best year of his career, but he's gigantically injury prone. You know, maybe if Steven Strasburg opts out, the market really opens up. But those are really only the big, you know, top of the rotation type of guys. You know, otherwise you're going to have to be taking a little bit of a risk. And I don't know, you know, if that's obviously the best option.
Yeah, it's a good point that you bring up, and whether or not it's the best option remains to be seen, but the off-season should prove most interesting, and of course we'll be getting to the off-season just by next week sometime, won't we?
Yeah, probably. You know, I mean, there could be some interesting names. You know, Chris Archer will probably be out there, but he's had two really down years since going to the Pirates. You know, there's guys like, you know, Jake Arrieta can opt out. Yu Darvish can opt out. There are some guys who could opt out and go out onto the market if they want to. You know, it'll be interesting to see, like, Jose Quintana has an $11.5 million option with a buyout of just $1 million. You know, do the Cubs buy him out and let him go? Or, you know, I mean, $11.5 million isn't too bad for a starting pitcher in today's market.
Yeah.
Then you look at, you know, Michael Walker is just 28, but he's been a bust. And then Zach Wheeler is 30, who looks like an ace when he's healthy. So there's still a lot of questions.
Yeah, that's a question. By the way, if I were a betting man, I would say that Quintana has pitched his last game for the Cubs.
Yeah, you know, the problem is if you let him go, how do you replace him?
Well, that's where some of the pitchers you mentioned come into consideration, right? Yeah, I think they could find someone as a free agent pitcher who would certainly do as good a job, if not better, than Quintana, who is, in my opinion, has turned out to be kind of a bust for the Cubs. I mean, he eats up a lot of innings, but he certainly has not been the pitcher they wanted when they signed him to that deal, when they made that trade with the White Sox.
Yeah, I actually think he was better with the White Sox than he was with the Cubs.
He was. He definitely was. So the Cubs then got... I don't think the Cubs came out winning that deal.
No, you know, they had a thing on, boy, where was it? It must have been one of the local Chicago websites where they graded out the big deals the Sox made, you know, the Chris Sale, the Adam Eaton, and the Jose Quintana deal. And apparently David Kaplan just went nuts on the Quintana deal, you know, explaining how it was just such a horrible deal for the Cubs. So I you know, it was just kind of like, oh, okay. I want to double check here and see what the deal was before I actually kind of kind of say anything. All right, here. Oh, yeah, well, this makes sense. The White Sox got Brian Fleet, who is still in their minors, Matt Rose, who's still in their minors, Dylan Cease, who we saw a little bit of last year. He wasn't great, but obviously it was his first time up. And then, of course, the big piece in that trade, Eloy Jimenez.
Well, there to me, there's a big concern for Jimenez and how he fare in the National League, because his feeling leaves a lot to be desired.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, he doesn't have to worry about that now. He's in the American League, so.
That's right, exactly,
you know.
Right. But will he be a DH? Will he eventually be a DH? And would they go in that direction?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I mean, he's capable enough to, you know, to fill in out there when needed. So, you know, we'll have to, you know, kind of see how that goes. It does appear as though both that Brian Fleet and Matt Rose are no longer with the White Sox, as they both played in the Independent League last year. So, you know, it looks like, yeah, it's just basically Dylan Cease and Eloy Jimenez for Jose Quintana, but that's still a pretty big positive for the White Sox, especially
is,
if,
and,
you know, if
look how many
Cease
home runs that Jimenez
anything.
Hit. Yeah, look how many homers he hit in just a small sample in terms of at-bats during the course of the season. He wound up with, what, 30 or so home runs?
Yeah.
30, yes. I think it was 30-plus, and Cease is only 23. So, you know, there's a lot of development left there, you know, and I mean, I know he showed signs here and there, but yeah, Jimenez hit 31 homers. I believe he led all the rookies with 79 RBIs, and he hit 267. Of course, he struck out a lot, but so does everybody else. So you can't really even say that about players anymore. So
that's baseball. That's the current crop of baseball we get now. Lots and lots of strikeouts.
So, but yeah, that was a, you know, apparently a much hated deal by, you know, by David Kaplan. I still think the deal the White Sox made with the Nationals was really kind of a steal for them as well. You know, they shipped Adam Eaton off to the Nationals, and in return they got three pitchers. They got Dane Dunning, who's still kind of working his way through the minors, but he is a prospect. Then they got Ronaldo Lopez and Lucas Giolito. So that they're going to end up getting what appear to be two top-of-the-rotation starters and maybe a third guy who develops into one in Dunning for an injury-prone outfielder.
Who is looking pretty good in the World Series, though, right now. As long as he's healthy.
You know, when he's healthy, he's always played well. You know, the problem, of course, is he's never healthy.
Yeah, you always wonder why some players are so injury-prone, like Eaton has had a history of injuries throughout the course of his career. Wonder what causes that.
Yeah, because, I mean, you look at it here, and, I mean, he was genuinely healthy this year. He actually played in 151 games. But the year before that, it was 95, and then his first year in Washington, it was just 23. You know, the White Sox, I thought they were pretty smart. They got two healthy years out of him and then dealt him off. So, you know, but, yeah, I mean, he's a solid player. I mean, he hit 269. He's not a big home run hitter. He ended up with 15. He did steal 15 bases, and he is a plus defender. So you do get that out of him. He plays both of the corner outfield positions really well, and of course he's a left-handed bat, which is a big deal. But yeah, I mean, when you look at it, and I mean, and it's two top of the rotation guys, and then maybe a third. That's a lot to give up for.
And how many RBIs did Eaton have during the season? It seems to me he's kind of a clutch hitter with men on base.
Yeah, he last year he ended up with just 49. So,
well, he only played less than 100 games that year. Though, what about this season?
No, this year it was 49. In his 151 games, he drove in 49. But, yeah, you know, you got to remember at the top of the order, he's really only getting those RBI chances if the order swings around for him. You know, it's very much akin to Chris Bryant, who doesn't drive in that many runs anymore because of where they had him hitting in the order.
Well, that was for a short period of time, and he's been, what, batting second or third most of the time? Second, I think, has been primarily his,
second,
his batting.
Yeah, when you hit, there's not a lot of RBIs in that two-hole, you know, unless you've got a leadoff hitter who's going to hit, you know, 70 doubles and he's in position to score all the time. So it's tough, and then obviously the bottom of the order doesn't always set you up to be successful. So it's a tough spot. So yeah, and then the last deal, obviously the Chris Sale deal. In that deal, they got Luis Alexander Basab. I'm going to go with that's probably wrong, but that's what I'm going to go with. Victor Diaz, who are both still in the minors. Michael Kopech, who missed this year with Tommy John, but is due back next year. And then Yoan Moncada, who was the number one rated player in baseball when they were in the minors when they made this deal. Moncada improved this year. I'm not quite sure if he's the player they think that he's going to be yet, but maybe he'll get there. I know this. Do they have the phonetic pronunciation here? Maybe I'll have better luck with it here. No, they don't, of course. So I'm going to go with Basabi is what I'm going to go with this time. He got up to double A, but he only hit 246 there in a small sample size. So he's still, a few years away. Again, he's only 23. So there is some time there. Let's see where Victor Diaz is in all this. Victor Diaz, he split time between A and Class A. It looks like he was hurt. He only pitched in 14 games and 12 innings. So there must be an injury situation there. So not much out of those two guys. Kopech looks like the real thing if he can stay healthy, and you got to figure if Moncada continues to get better, they did pretty well in this deal as well.
They did, and it seems to me that Sales has started to regress a little bit at the end of the season, and has he started to become injury prone now?
Yeah. Well, that and the fact that everything is monitored, like this was his first real injury-prone year. He only made 25 starts. I know he only made 27 last year, but a lot of that was by choice. They skipped him trying to rest him. And, you can't complain they won the World Series. Last year he was 6-11, though, with a 4.40 ERA in those 25 starts. And he posted his lowest numbers of innings pitched as a starter. So, yeah, you got to kind of start to wonder. I mean, he'll be 31. Is the wear and tear getting to him already?
It's very
he's never had a series.
Every pitcher is different, though. I mean, I've seen some pitchers who pitching top-notch baseball at 35, 36 years old, and other pitchers, when they get into the early 30s, are done. The wear and tear just gets to them. So it depends, and it could be happening to Sales, but of course, we'll see if he can bounce back next season. But I think it's a little bit worrying about the down year he had.
Yeah, well, that and the fact that they just, gave him a gigantic contract, and he went out and he had the worst year of his career. So that's got to be, of concern. Of course, with every other contract the Red Sox have handed out, with the way things are going for them. So,
well, certainly they were probably the most disappointing team in the American League, at least for this season.
Yeah. Yeah, them and the Cubs definitely win those titles in each league. There's no doubt about that. I mean, they were both bad. No other way to put it. It was teams with a lot of talent that should have won and didn't. So.
Yeah, and can those teams bounce back for 2020?
Yeah, well, you know, and I mean, obviously, you know, the tough part is going to be we know the Red Sox aren't making any changes. You know, they've already come out and said that they're trying to get under the luxury tax. The only thing they're going to do is subtract. So they, you know, they won't be adding anybody. And I think the big key will be, does this subtraction mean losing Mookie Betts? Because obviously that's going to be a big key to their success.
Yeah, that's critical. And do you think he's going to go into free agency and not re-sign with the Red Sox, as it has been speculated?
Well, the problem is, you know, he's in his last year of arbitration. He's going to get a big award. You know, he got $20 million last year. You know, my guess is it jumps to 22 or 25. Then he hits the free agent market, and if they're serious about getting under this luxury tax, they can't sign him with what he's going to get, because you're looking at $30 million a year.
Absolutely.
You know, the only way they can afford him is if J.D. Martinez opts out and they let him walk away.
It's hard to see them being a real bona fide contender against the Yankees for next season. If the Yankees are injury-free, I don't see any team stopping them in the AL East.
Well, you know, if the Red Sox could stay healthy, you know, they would have a healthy Chris Sale and a healthy David Price. And, you know, Eduardo Rodriguez had a fantastic year for them. You know, he was an 18-game winner with a really solid ERA. He was the only pitcher who did anything. So, you know, the Red Sox could compete. It's just, can they, you know, if their injuries obviously hurt them more than the Yankees, I mean, it seemed no matter who got hurt for the Yankees, they just plugged the next guy in and it worked.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
You know, at times I think the Red Sox would have been better off having you starting games than some of the guys they ran out there to replace Price and Sale.
Yeah, that for some reason the Yankees just had a tremendous amount of depth, and they really had their fair share of injuries, and that's not exaggerating. They had a tremendous amount of injuries,
yeah.
And they won the division easily.
Yeah, and, you know, the sad part, it's already starting out for the Yankees again. You know, it's already been announced that Aaron Hicks needs Tommy John surgery, and he'll miss all of next year.
Yeah, but that's not something you want to see happening going into the off season.
So yeah, it was just, you know, kind of like, oh, you know, okay, you know, what are we doing? But, you know, like, you know, the Red Sox, you know, the other key is, you know, they thought they had a really good bullpen idea when they were going to do this, you know, bullpen by committee. It was going to be, you know, Ryan Brazier and Matt Barnes, and they both exploded. You know, did they find the solution in Brandon Workman? I mean, was 10-1 with a 1.88 ERA and did save 16 games, but, you know, bullpens are so hit or miss year to year. They've got to fix that. But if they don't want to spend any money, you know, kind of like the Cubs need to fix their bullpen, but you're going to have to spend money to do it. You just bring these fly by night veteran guys and hope that they relive their glory. So I honestly don't know what you're going to get out of the Red Sox next year.
No, and as you pointed out, the bullpen is such an iffy situation. One year the bullpen can be great, and you bring the same players back the next season, and they get blasted.
Yeah. So yeah, you know that, you know what I mean, because you look at the Red Sox and you think, okay, you know, we're, you know, like I said, you know, and I was wrong. Rodriguez actually won 19 games. But, you know, if you're running Rodriguez, a healthy Chris Sale, a healthy David Price, and then Nathan Eovaldi, you're like, okay, well, that's four really good starting pitchers. You got to think they have one prospect somewhere they could plug in and run as number five. So you look like you can compete there, but then you start looking at it and you go, like we said, Sale's had trouble. Price has had some injury issues, and
all
these entire career, he made all his money in that World Series. You look at his regular season, I think he's been hurt every year he's played. So I don't know why they gave him all that money. So, yeah, just so many questions.
Yeah, and not enough answers. And that's the name of the game. Pitching and defense always seems to win, but it seems that the pitchers are not consistent anymore in both the starters and relievers in terms of injuries. That's the key, to be healthy, to get all of your starters healthy. But it seems that for some reason the injuries just seem to mount up from year after year after year, and I can never figure out why in this modern era we're living in now with better training and better medication and everything else, the injuries are worse than they've ever been.
Yeah, don't. You're going to get me started, and we're going to go down the rabbit hole here with this, because this
right.
This drives me completely nuts. That I'll listen to an injury, and the one that really got me was a different sport, but Clay Thompson. He tore his ACL in June of last year, or no, of this year. So he's had what, June, July, August, September. He's had 5 months to rehab. They had already said he wouldn't be back till February. Steve Kerr came out the day before the season and said he doesn't expect him to play this year. I've had 5 knee surgeries. I don't have the kind of training staff he has. I was never out for more than 8 weeks. Explain that to me, how a tip-top, in-shape professional athlete is going to take over a year to return from an ACL. It's not a full reconstruction. It's one ligament they're going to go in and fix, and he can't come back in a reasonable time, but a fat SOB like me misses 2 months?
Well, you're obviously a tougher mindset than those guys. Maybe you think they're being mollycoddled now, the modern athlete? You think they're just being too conservative in terms of injuries and bringing them back?
Yeah, I think what everybody's afraid of is these guys get paid so much money that if they, you know, they bring them back and they're not exactly 100%, that they're going to get a more serious injury and miss even more time. So instead of working them the proper way they should and getting them back, they stretch things out. And they stretch it out and stretch it out. You know, because remember, Tommy John never took, you know, the surgery never took as long to recover as it does now in baseball.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, now the minute a guy gets Tommy John, he's done for a year plus.
At least.
It never used to be in here.
Yeah, they're just afraid that if they're not taking that 1 year off plus, they're going to come back and get re-injured quickly again. They try to avoid that, but I don't see it happening. It can backfire on them too. I mean, once a guy's out a year, how long does it take for him to get back in playing shape again?
Right. You know, and I mean that, you know, that's one of the things with baseball. You know, while you can throw a simulated game, you know, hey, here, you know, we're throwing a simulated game, it's not a real game. You can't work that in like you can
you
with
can't.
Some of the other sports.
You cannot.
So, you know, the only way to find out is to play an actual game, but they don't want them to play games.
No, it just sometimes it borders on the ridiculous what's going on with the athletes nowadays. I mean, except in hockey,
yeah.
With the toughest athletes on the planet.
Yeah, just ridiculous what some of those guys you know go through. But yeah, I just. You know, it's like, you know, every time I see these things, it's kind of like, okay, why is this guy out so long?
Yeah, well,
you
we
know
there's going to be injuries. We know there's going to be
injuries,
but it's the length of time that they're out. Then sometimes it could be quite a minor thing, and
Yeah.
It's just mind-boggling. Now, I could see a guy being out of a little bit of time for a hamstring. You know what? You know, the hamstring doesn't heal properly. He can come back too soon and re-injure it. But some of these other injuries are just seem to be so minor, and they're still out such a long period of time.
Yeah, and, you know, I do wonder now if the media scrutiny has a lot to do with these guys being held out longer. You know, like if you remember, and again, this is a basketball one, you know, Kevin Durant was cleared to play. He got hurt. He tore that Achilles. And immediately they blamed it on the Golden State Warriors, saying he was not ready to play. Now, not only was he cleared by the Warriors doctors, he was cleared by his own personal doctors. So he was ready to go. But immediately, and without even researching it, the media goes right away and they say, well, look at what they did to him. You know, they forced him to play. No, they didn't force him to play. He wanted to play. It just kind of happened. So,
well, you immediately there again on that one after he was injured, unrelated injury, but you knew the media was going to harp on it and saying they brought him back too soon.
Yeah, you know, and I know the Jets are going through this right now with one of their offensive linemen. They traded for a guy from Oakland who now he's turned up hurt, and his doctors say he's more hurt than the Jets doctors say he is. And it got to the point where I believe the Jets actually ended up suspending him because they couldn't work out any kind of agreement. So it was just, you know, kind of strange with the way, you know, things have played out through this. And, you know, but again, you know, if he was to play and he got hurt, they would immediately blame it on the Jets. You know, why did they force him to play?
Now, if the Jets go ahead and suspend him because they think he's ready to play, but he doesn't, but he says he's not, do they still have to pay him?
You know, I think it's kind of their choice. I believe they would, because in a situation like this, they would probably lose the grievance because he does have another medical opinion saying he's not ready to play.
Unfortunately for the Jets, I think you're probably correct about that scenario happening.
So yeah, you know what I mean. So again, I mean, you just got to, you know, you got to kind of weigh, I guess, the good with the bad, or however you want to look at it. I mean, I know you don't want this negative media attention because that, you know, plays into who will sign with you, you know, free agent signing with you, or, you know, things like that, because they're like, oh, well, look at this medical staff, you know, so you always got to kind of wonder, and maybe that's part of the reason why they let these guys sit out as long as they do.
Yeah. I always often wonder though, is it in part because of the politically correct society we live in nowadays? You think that's a factor? I think it's a factor when it comes to these injuries.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, 100%. It takes, it takes, you know, that's part of the consideration with, you know, with the way they handle things or they do things. So it's just kind of like, you know, okay, what do we do, or how do we look? I mean, you know, I'm trying to think of, you know, what the best way to describe it, but, you know, you don't want to come off looking bad in somebody's eyes because obviously you've got your players to take care of and free agents to try to bring in. And, you know, I mean, just that, you know, that one negative report could change a guy's mind about playing for you.
Yeah, that could. That could. And I'm sure the teams don't want to see a myriad of Twitter complaints about them or Facebook complaints about them. And
right.
Then a potential free agent might look at that and saying, hey, they're not treating their players right. I'm not going to sign with them.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, that's the last thing you need is to kind of get a buzz like that going you know, regardless of if it's true or not.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, you know, just one of, you know, one of those things I guess we got to kind of live with now, even though, like I said, it just, it drives me crazy when I hear them say, oh, yeah, well, you know, this guy's got a knee injury and he's going to be out, you know, 8 months. 8 months. I was out 8 weeks. And that was one of five.
Yeah.
Only one of my surgeries kept 8 weeks. The other four, I was back before 8 weeks. So I, and again, I'm not a professional athlete. I'm not playing basketball and jumping up and down. But, you know, there's still a lot of wear and tear when you're in the wrestling ring, no matter how you want to look at it or what you think of the sport. So I don't get it. It just baffles me.
Yeah, like you pointed out, you know, wrestling's a work sport, but there's still a lot of injuries that the average wrestler has to contend with over the course of his career, I'm sure.
Yeah. You know, and I know, like, now I just saw the report that one guy in WWE, I'm trying to remember what his work name is, Xavier Woods. I don't remember what his actual name is. He tore an Achilles. So he's going to be out about a year working and recovering from that. So, whether you think it's real or however you look at it, I mean, whatever you believe, the injuries are real.
Is that a legit 1 year for an Achilles?
Yeah, just about a year it takes to recover from an Achilles with the, you know, between the surgery and the rehab and all the stuff that goes on with it. It takes just about a year.
Yeah, and I think one of the reasons there's so many injuries in that profession is that there's not much real wrestling going on, or a legitimate attempt at least to have some actual wrestling going on. There's too many high spots and acrobatics, and because of the result of the way that style is nowadays, there's more injuries.
Yeah, you know, and there should be with the way, you know, that's done. I mean, they take so many unnecessary chances that doesn't make a lot of sense. Yes, they're great athletes. I guess the crowd enjoys it. I mean, I don't, but, you know, to each their own. And, yeah, you know, you're going to get hurt. There's just going to be more injuries.
You know, don't forget the fans are growing up with this kind of style, and this is what they're used to, and I don't see it ever changing.
Yeah, no, I watched the first two matches on the AEW show Wednesday, and honestly, I literally just felt like I was watching Lucha Libre. You know, it was just exactly what I'm used to seeing, you know, all those years ago when I watched that. I mean, you know, and they're actually trained in gymnastics. When you train for Lucha Libre, part of your in-ring training is gymnastics. And that's all this looked like.
Yeah, I could see that with all the dives out of the ring. And, they really have to have confidence that their opponents are going to protect them properly when they do those dives, too, because if they botch the spot, they could be seriously injured.
Yeah, and, you know, many, many guys have. You know, there's a lot of those dives go wrong, especially on the indie scene. You know, because it's guys who shouldn't be diving into guys who shouldn't be trying to catch guys. So
yeah, it's a shame how it's gravitated to this. And of course, I could always go on YouTube and look at some old matches from the 50s and actually see some wrestling. But
yeah.
I guess I'm in the minority when I do that.
Yeah, no, it just I don't even know, you know, what to really say anymore when it comes to it. I mean, people want to talk to me about it, and I'm like, I don't know what to tell you. You know, it's like, yeah, you know, if you enjoy it, great. You know, and I'm glad you're watching wrestling or enjoying wrestling again or whatever it is, but it's just it's not for me.
Well, you were in the business 20 years plus, right? When would you say it started to change the way it is right now? The last decade? Or does it even go back further than that?
You know, it really started when there became more of an emphasis on cruiserweights and smaller wrestlers. You know, because as a heavyweight, you weren't expected to do any of that stuff. You know, I mean, a heavyweight doing a drop kick was, you know, that blew the roof off of buildings. You know, I mean, I don't know how many people remember Jerry Blackwell, but he was a big 400-pounder, and he could throw a legitimate drop kick. And he would pull it out every once in a while. I mean, it would, you know, it would pop the crowd like you wouldn't believe. I mean, that was the big thing, this big chubby guy throwing a drop kick. You know, but now, you know, that's nothing.
No, it's different with all the cruiserweights in action right now. And now I've seen, in fact, you were talking about AEW. There was a match, I think I saw the last couple minutes of it, when the current champion, I think Chris Jericho, wrestled somebody who weighed about 170 pounds. I mean, is that a legitimate match?
It is now. You know, it never would have been before. Back when I, you know, when you had been watching for a little while and I started wrestling, the champ would have squashed that guy.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, he'd have thrown him all over the ring. But in today's wrestling, you know, and a lot of this comes, I mean, a lot of this changed when Rey Mysterio first got his push in WCW and he started beating legitimate heavyweights. You know, because you always want to root for the underdog. And obviously he was the ultimate underdog. So, you know, but I mean, you look at a lot of these guys who have been champions. I mean, you know, I know everybody loved Eddie Guerrero, and it's disappointing that, you know, he's deceased. And, you know, you throw Chris Benoit into these categories. These guys barely weighed 200 pounds.
Yeah, of course, they were billed. Yeah. I think they probably billed him for being more. They billed him probably 220, 230.
Yeah, in that area. You know, the same thing with Shawn Michaels. They always build him at 30 or 40 pounds heavier than what he was. You know, and it's just so different. I mean, you know what? Bruno Sammartino was a legit 260, 270. You know, what did Fez go when he wrestled?
He was about 230. He was about 225, 230.
Yeah, you know, Harley Race was probably, you know, 240, 250. I know he put on some weight as he got older. You know, so these guys were always kind of legitimate heavyweights. But then, you know, slowly but surely these guys started to seep in, you know, that in reality they would have been tag team guys. You know, they would have been in an over tag team, all of the Rock and Roll Express or the Fabulous Ones, or you could even go back to the High Flyers, who were two small guys that, you know, were over as a tag team, but not much as single guys. And that's what these guys used to be. You know, I mean, can anybody legitimately name me a cruiserweight champ from the early 1980s?
I certainly can't. And didn't you're somewhat of a historian. Did Rey Mysterio ever beat Paul White in a match? Over him?
I don't believe he ever pinned him. I know he had beaten him a few times by disqualification, but I don't believe there was ever a pinfall.
Yeah, well, at least there was some credibility with that, because. Yeah, how in your right mind, anybody in their right mind could see a guy weighing 160, 170 pounds pinning a guy who weighs 400 plus?
Right. But, you know, you do remember, you know, at one point in WCW, Rey Mysterio pinned Kevin Nash. He got a three count on Kevin Nash, you know, who's legitimately, what, 6'9", 6'10", and probably 300 plus pounds.
Right.
So.
And there was a couple of. There was a couple of matches in WWF when, was it six-pack or what? 1-2-3 Kid beat Razor Ramon. Scott Hall.
Yeah.
A couple of weeks in a row on TV, pinned him.
Yeah.
You know, quick, one of these quick three-count type things or a small package, and they made a big deal about that. But it's hard to see him legitimately beating someone who weighs 300 pounds.
Yeah, you know, like I could buy that happening once. You know, maybe you catch the guy by surprise and you roll him up and you get the three count.
Right, exactly.
You know, okay, but yeah, to, you know, because when, you know, when you get those guys like that, then that's got to continually happen for them to beat heavyweights. And I just don't know if, can, you know, can you continue to do that?
Yeah, that's why they started to go to the formula of winning on a count out or a run-in from outside interference or some kind of a fluke disqualification. You know, so it wasn't a legitimate pin, but it was a, still a victory for the underdog.
So yeah, you know, it, just one of those things. And then, you know, like I was telling you about, you know, the, like the junior heavyweight champions I remember after Jerry Briscoe would be guys like Nelson Royal or Les Thornton.
Right. And those guys are legitimate wrestlers. Those guys, both of those guys are legit wrestlers. They had a strong, both have strong amateur backgrounds. In fact, as I may have pointed out before, in the 50s, the 40s, it was, unless you had a strong amateur background, you couldn't even get into professional wrestling. It was, unless you really knew somebody. So all these guys had strong backgrounds. And talk about a guy that had that wild, the wild persona in the ring, Mad Dog Vachon, Maurice Vachon. He was an Olympic champion. This guy could actually wrestle.
Yeah.
Although he never really showed it too much. He never really showed it too much in his later part of his career or when he was champion, but he was a legitimate amateur wrestler. He could actually wrestle.
Yeah, well, you know, and that's always one of the funniest things about, you know, those kind of guys is, I mean, you'll, you know, like I just saw an old shoot interview with George the Animal Steele, who obviously, you know, what didn't speak and ate turnbuckles and, you know, all this other stuff in the later part of his career. And he's on camera talking very eloquently about different things and different situations. And it's just kind of humorous after you look at his character.
Yeah. Yeah. And he was, I think he was a teacher in high school. I think he was a high school teacher and not only a coach, but also I think in maybe an English class or so. He had smarts. Although of course his persona wouldn't allow him to talk on camera very often.
Yeah, that's always the persona I wanted. I just didn't want to talk on camera, but sadly I never kind of got there. So,
were you a good promo cutter in your day?
You know, I ended up being. I didn't start off as one, but it, you know, by, you know, after cutting just a few, you kind of pick up what to do and how to do it. And, you know, I mean, to be fair, if you can't cut a promo as a bad guy or a heel, as they say, you've got no business on the mic, because that's the easiest thing in the world to do is be a heel. You know, I mean, all you got to do is go, as soon as you walk out the curtain, the first person you see, you say, "Hey, you suck." And, you know, that'll get them turning on you already. So it's not difficult.
Yeah.
The hard part is go up there, you know, in places you've never been, which I always kind of enjoyed, and find a way to get the crowd behind you.
Yeah, they're not familiar with you. That can't be an easy thing to do.
So.
Well, that comes with ring psychology, which, of course, not many have anymore.
Yeah, no. Well, you know, like I know when I was coming down to the end of my career, the only place I was really kind of wrestling regularly was a promotion called Fire Pro in Indiana that my buddy ran. And I had a feud with a wrestler by the name of Cade Lee, and he was another veteran guy. He had been in, you know, by that time I was over 20. He had probably been doing it for about 10 years on the indie scene, maybe a little more. We would always open the shows because we knew how to get the crowd fired up. And now when I legitimately tell you we did nothing in the ring, it got to the point where I would get them to clap and we would go to lock up and he wouldn't want to lock up and I would get the crowd to chant chicken at him. So this was the first 5 minutes of our match before we ever really got going. In today's wrestling, you're only going, 10 to 12. We're halfway through and we haven't done anything.
Yeah, that's the difference.
And I used to tell these idiots in the back, they would always ask me, I can't believe you're so over. How are you so over? And I'm like, well, you got to understand, guys, there's two things. Less is more, and the crowd wants to be involved. I could put a guy in an arm hold and then start playing to the crowd. Hey, do you want to see me break his arm? Do you want to see me twist his arm again? Should I punch him in the face? And I mean, there were times I could get the crowd to chant punch him in the face for me. You're not doing anything.
Yeah, when you were a trainer, for a long time and considered one of the better trainers in the business. Are those things that can be taught? Can you teach those things, those skills to a wrestler besides the basic grips and moves and holds?
You can, if the guy has charisma, you can teach them how to work the crowd. But if you get a guy who's just bland and doesn't have that personality or is a little too shy, there's just nothing you can do, because if they're not going to open up to the crowd, it's just not going to happen.
So some things are innate. Some things are that you really can't teach a wrestler.
So, there are just natural guys whose personality leads them down one path or another. There are plenty of guys who can be a good guy or a bad guy, but some guys are just they have to be a bad guy because. Either they don't want to interact with the crowd or they can't interact with the crowd or, there's just something there. And, a lot of that, this is where we miss the old school manager. Because back in the day, if you had a guy with a boatload of talent who couldn't do these things, you put him with a manager.
That's right. Who'll do the job for you, help you out. One thing you wrestle for different promotions, right? And sometimes did you wrestle for different independent promotions, two or three different promotions in the course of a week? Different promotions.
Oh, yeah.
Not just one set.
So,
were you a face in one? Is it possible to be a face in one promotion and a heel in the other promotion, depending on where you wrestled?
Yeah, well, what it used to be is, the original plan is what I would try to do is work a Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday type of schedule and hope maybe one day I could get a double booking, maybe a Saturday afternoon or Saturday night or sometimes Sunday afternoon and Sunday night. But, yeah, as long as, because, there would be days like, for me, luckily, I was generally a face all the time. I was very rarely a heel. It just, for whatever reason, little kids seemed to like my character and they would want to cheer me. So it made it easy. But, I would wrestle in Kentucky and I would be a face. And then the next day I would have, my match would be in Tennessee and I would be a heel. So there's enough separation there to where they don't know who you are. And obviously this was before the internet was huge and you didn't really see, this guy was this here or that there. Now, there aren't that many indie shows, but it would be a little tougher because somebody would go online and say, well, I don't know what you're talking about. This guy's a face here, but now he's a heel. This doesn't make any sense. This is garbage.
Yeah.
We're not going to watch it because that's what fans do. Even though they're going to go to every show, they'll tell you it's garbage and you're going to not watch it.
Are there any of your matches available? There's nothing on YouTube, is there, of when you wrestled on the independent circuit the years ago?
There were a couple. I don't know if they're still there. There were a couple from Fire Pro that were on the indies, that were on YouTube. This was years ago, though, so I don't know what's still there. I still have a large majority of them in VHS format, which probably doesn't do anybody any good anymore. But I don't know. I'm sure a lot of those tapings have been destroyed or lost or, you know, whatever. I mean, like, I honestly don't even know if I put one of these VHS tapes in, if they would work, you know, as much as they've been moved around.
They would probably still work. They would probably still work. And maybe the quality won't be as good as it was then, but it'll still be decent. Yeah, you're interesting you're talking about that. A lot of these things have been erased. Yeah, exactly. You know, that's some great matches in California are gone forever because they raced the promoters went over the VHF and their master tapes and re-recorded over them. So a lot of stuff from Southern California, for example, in the days of Fred Blasi and this Dick Byer, the Destroyer, are gone forever, and it's a shame, really, because it's a part of history, and you'd like to see these guys in their prime and how they did, but unfortunately, the promoters weren't smart enough to keep these master tapes, and they're gone.
Yeah. Well, you know, and a lot of it was just money-saving. You know,
let's reuse
the... You know, so it, you know, as bad as it is, it happens.
Yep. That's unfortunate, the way of the business, I'm afraid.
You know, yeah, that's just kind of, you know, kind of how it went. As being a former company owner, I understand all about saving money. So, it's that this happened, I do understand why they did it.
Yeah, it makes sense. I'm still surprised that there's still independent promotions going on in the Chicago area because I don't see how they could be profitable anymore. The fan base seems a lot lower now for the attendance they get.
Well, trust me, they're not profitable. So there are guys out there who want to be feds and are losing a lot of money to be a wrestler. So... But all right, well let's get on here as we're running out of show time. I don't want to forget your picks here. Last week you had a bit of a struggle. You did get Ohio State right as a winner, but they didn't actually cover a 27 point spur. Northwestern couldn't keep the game within 27 points. U of I up big on you. So we'll give you a couple picks. Yeah, huge. We'll start off with Illinois is at Purdue tomorrow. Do you have the Illini getting a win there over Purdue?
Since it's a road game, I'm going to have to go along with Purdue winning this one, but I think it'll be a fairly close, competitive game.
All right, and then we have Northwestern is at home. They are facing another ranked team here. They get number 20 Iowa. You got the purple getting a win, or you got Iowa continuing Northwestern on the losing path?
I'm afraid that they'll have to go with Iowa winning over Northwestern. This is one of the worst seasons they've had in a long, long time.
Yeah,
they are scuffling. So, and even with the kind of stumble last week there, you are still 64-32 on doing this. So you're well above
right?
500. Yes.
Exactly 2 out of 3,
so even
I believe that would be.
So we should be good. Now you're gonna watch the World Series, which should be starting here pretty soon.
I'll probably watch a few innings of the game. And Washington have they lost? They haven't lost a game in the playoffs yet, have they?
Yeah.
Nine straight. Or eight straight.
You think they're going to run the table?
Well, luckily, we're out of time, and I don't have to answer that. So, well, I'm Radio. Still, you can look me up on Twitter and call me Hampton.